This podcast is part of the Democracy Group.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. We are talking politics and religion without killing each other. I am your host, Corey Nathan, and it is an honor to be a part of the Democracy Group, a network of podcasts that examines what's broken in our democracy and how we can work together to fix it. Remember to subscribe or follow, and keep on telling you, write those reviews, leave us a rating. They really do help. So here's a couple nice reviews. We got one from CKJRSW, CK Junior Southwest. That's what I'm going to call you. We got this. Love the passion. Great conversations with smart people and hard topics. Love from Arizona. So yeah, I guess it was Southwest. So thank you, CK Junior from Southwest. I won't take credit for being one of those smart people, but I definitely appreciate having a lot of smart people on the show. So thank you for the five stars and for writing in. Let's see. We also heard from Junkman SCV. I think I know who this is. I'm pretty sure this is a buddy of mine from Santa Clarita, Roland, who runs Junk King. And yeah, so if you need any junk removed, he will put your junk in his trunk, or actually his truck. So anyway, we've used him at my home and at our business, and his team is really terrific. So here's what Junkman SCV said: mixing the unmixable. We all know we don't speak about politics and religion if we don't want to heat anyone up. Talking politics and religion does without heating anyone up. Sound conversations that provoke thoughtful insight into the other side of the tracks. Hop on for the ride, take a back seat, and enjoy the witty banter. RL. Yeah, so it's definitely my buddy, Roland. Thank you, Roland. All these reviews really do help. I will put a link in our show notes to make it easy for you to write your own review. We've been getting a few more, so it's really encouraging, and it also definitely helps us in the rankings so that more folks can participate in the conversation. I love hearing from you and engaging, understanding different points of view, trying to engage in a better, healthier way, and having these important conversations like the one that we're having today that frankly, I think might piss some people off. So let me just address something. Having a show called Talking Politics and Religion Without Killing Each Other, it doesn't mean that I don't have any views, nor does it mean that I'm looking to agree with everyone. In fact, I have pretty well-informed at this point, some well-informed views. And in some cases, as you can tell, if you've been listening for a bit, I'm very passionate about certain topics that we cover. I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on all of them or super passionate about every single one of them. But there are a couple that I really do get that hit close to home with me. So that inevitably, when I express those views, it inevitably will tweak some beaks, if you will, especially people who are very categorical in their views, the ones I've referred to as extremists and screamers. I mean, let's face it, the screamers and extremists are too often the ones who are taking all the oxygen out of the room, making it really hard for, I've referred to the 85% of us who don't fall into one extreme or another, to have our voices heard. So what's even worse is that so many others who maybe aren't as extreme in their own views, but the fact that the screamers are dominating the debate just in terms of volume, it gives the impression that their take on things is the only take. So I have friends who independently are pretty moderate, but their impression is that the issue is so charged, so polarized, and everyone else is extreme in their views. So the entire playing field ends up getting warped. And that's why when it comes to some topics, I feel compelled to have sharper elbows, to assert my voice in order to cut through this clutter, the chaos that all the screamers inject into the system. I was thinking of my buddy. A buddy of mine runs one of the best creative shops in the entire entertainment industry. It's a great company, working on some huge projects, consistently doing some of the best work. And a company culture, if you ever walk into their shop, it just can't be beat. People love working there. They're all doing great work. And what he says is one of the secrets to their success. It's really simple. He says, we're just grown-ass people doing kick-ass work. grown-ass people doing kick-ass work. But then he says, sometimes with a smile, he goes, which means sometimes you got to kick some ass. You know, he's competitive. You know, he's creative. He's really good person. But sometimes you got to kick some ass. Grown-ass people doing kick-ass work means sometimes you got to kick some ass. So sometimes I don't come across as a perfect diplomat, because sometimes the topic is really important. The principles we're talking about require a willingness and a readiness to kick some ass. So a couple of subjects that, you know, the topics that I have some strong, deeply held views about include what it means to be a Christian and what it means to be a conservative. And here's the thing. I accept the fact that any number of folks arrive at different conclusions than I do for any number of reasons. Either way, what I won't do is simply forfeit, wave the red flag, cede the ground to those who think the conversation's over, that their view is the only acceptable view, that only those who bow down, who submit to their interpretations are real Christians, for example. That tendency is far from a new proclivity, if you will, that runs, and it's historic. It runs through the history of Christianity and Western culture. This whole idea of claiming exclusive ownership of all the theological terrain known as Christianity, of all the philosophical domain known as conservatism, and that their claims are unimpeachable, so to speak. So here's, I'm not going to have it. I'm not having it. So when we live in a time when one of the most lasting images we have, one of the most indelible pictures of this chapter in history is of a sign saying Jesus saves right next to the noose that the insurrectionists on January 6th set up. And then you have a bunch of guys in the Senate chambers chanting, hang Mike Pence, hang Mike Pence, but then invoking the name of Jesus. This is a time to be assertive. Of course, with a commitment to nonviolence, but nonviolent resistance nonetheless, and recognizing the insidiousness of these types of conflations. The idea that Jesus, the Jesus of history, the Jesus who taught the principles of the Sermon on the Mount, that Jesus would lend his name to that kind of ungodly movement, the most un-Jesus-like mob, a mob that was more like the mob that shouted out at Pilate to have Jesus put to death. Let's be honest about it. I'm not gonna pretend that that's the true Christianity, nor am I gonna pretend that that represents real conservatism. And look, I know any number of folks who lean toward voting for Trump for whatever reason, they don't endorse that sort of thing. Most of the people I know that I've talked to about this certainly don't want to identify with violent, you know, the violence that happened, the violent mobs. That said, there's a certain callousness that it's built up. You've heard it just like me. Oh, well, most of them just walked into the Capitol. They were let in. They were mostly peaceful protesters. Or I get the diversion, like the what about? Well, where was your outrage when they were storming and looting in Portland? Or sometimes there's like a glancing acknowledgement that it was bad, as if to like they have to establish their reasonableness. They were a bunch of yahoos and that was terrible, but, and then they go into some canned set of talking points about how terrible Joe Biden has been, or how awful our country is, or, you know, it has been going, how much better things were under Trump. But like I said, I'm not going to have it. We could talk about whether they were peaceful protesters and how our system of justice has worked. Like, if you want to talk about it, fine, let's talk about it. But we're going to talk about it based on the actual record, based on actual facts, not some set of talking points. If you want to address what happened after George Floyd was murdered and the protest movement that ensued in the summer of 2020, fine, let's talk about it. But we're going to talk about it, talk about what it was about, talk about the degree to which any violence actually took place, talk about what was underneath the civil unrest. We're going to talk about it, not just rehash what some conflict entrepreneur spewed yet again on his show, get some clicks, you know, double down on you know, the fear and anger thing. We could talk about that. We can even talk about the Biden administration and the record under Biden. But we're going to talk about it, not as those, you know, right wing conflict entrepreneurs would talk about it. We're going to talk about it like better informed, engaged citizens who see people that we disagree with as our neighbors, not as our enemies, as people that we can disagree with on policy and look honestly at the successes and the failures, at the process. But mostly, we have to be committed to fidelity to this country, to the Constitutional Republic, and an appreciation for American democracy. So here's the thing. We could talk about all those things, but that's a distraction from the actual topic at hand. So what we could do is we could put it all on an index card, each one, and talk about it some other time. We could put it on a little digital notepad on our phone, and yeah, we can have the conversation. But today, we're going to talk about what it means to be a conservative and whether Donald Trump is one. And today, well, I'm going to do this in two parts. I'm going to look at scripture, you know, and so on part two of this conversation, we're going to look at it. We're going to look at the Bible. We're going to check in to see what's in there. Because the Bible, scripture, is supposed to serve as, for those of us who identify as Christians, it's supposed to serve as our authority for people who say, you know, we believe in that thing. What does it mean to be a Christian? What are the virtues we espouse? So next, you know, on the next conversation, part two of this conversation, I'm going to do that. I'm going to crack open the Bible and see what that thing says. So let's tackle the first thing, the first subject first, conservatism. Going to dive in. But before we move on, I wanted to tell you about something else that's important. Money. Specifically your money. In all seriousness, I wanted to tell you about my advisor and my friend, George Meza. George runs Meza Wealth Management. And with George, it's not just about money. It's about helping us manage our present and plan for our future. And unlike a lot of other firms out there, George and I actually have a relationship. He knows me. He knows my family. And I know his wonderful family. I also know his firm and the incredible team he's put together, from his chief investment officer to some of the other great people in his office, like Jessica, their head of operations, that are always there to help me and with all aspects of our portfolio. You see, the thing is, I got a lot going on. I guess we all got a lot going on, and I don't have the time to watch our investments all day, every day. And even if I did, I don't have the experience and expertise that George's team collectively has. So we get the entire Meza Wealth Management team, all their expertise and all their integrity. And again, it's based on George knowing me personally, knowing my goals, and even the kind of risk that's appropriate for me to take, which, by the way, could change from one season to the next. And they're on top of all of that. So if you want George Meza and Meza Wealth Management to be on your team, just visit their website, MezaWealth.com. That's M-E-Z-A Wealth.com, www.MezaWealth.com. And that will also be in our show notes, so you can check that. And now, back to our show. So, what does it mean to be a conservative? What are some of the principles that define conservatism? And everybody can look this up on their own. We've talked about some scholars throughout history, from Edmund Burke and William F. Buckley, or more contemporary scholars like Thomas Sowell. We've had a few conservative scholars and politicians on the program, like Yuval Levin, Danny Pletka. Danielle was on early on. And just recently, you know, we had Adam Kinzinger, some real pillars of conservatism. So what is conservatism? To sum up, there's seven core principles of conservatism, and I'll go through each one. One is individual freedom, the idea that individual liberties should be protected, preserved against government intrusion. And individual freedom goes along with the principle of limited government. So individual freedom, limited government, and at the same time, we conservatives also believe in the rule of law. Individual freedom is enhanced by limited government, but it's, first of all, it's limited government, not an invisible or non-existent government, a limited government. But limiting our government works best when there's a shared commitment to the rule of law. individual freedom, limited government, rule of law. So rule of law, that's where historically brilliant, you know, I would say miraculous documents like the American Constitution have served us really well. On a smaller scale, I'll tell you, I've been a part of a local business group for almost 15 years. When we started our local service business, one of the first things we wanted to do was get plugged into the community. So we checked out a bunch of networking groups here in town. And the one we ended up joining is by far biggest, the best on so many levels in this area. And it's not just about networking. It's about having resources that we need for our business, as well as relationships that we've developed there. But really quick story about the SCVBG, Santa Clarita Valley Business Group. Me being me, there were certain things about that group when I first joined. I didn't quite fit in. I'm not one to just like conform for the sake of conforming or even for the sake of business development. So I got into a specific conflict with one of the other members. I don't even remember what it was about. In a way, it doesn't even matter. But right after it happened, the president of the organization at the time, a fellow who subsequently I became really good friends with, he was a president of the group that year. And after I had this little run-in, he invites me out to lunch. So I go to lunch with Mr. President, kind of thinking, taken out to the whooping shed, right? And I ask him, I was like, Dennis, can we just cut to the chase? Did you bring me here to kick me out of the group? And he goes, no, I'm going to do worse than that. I'm going to make you president someday. And he did. He was right. About a year or two after that conversation, I was voted on the board. Then after a couple of years on the board, I became VP, the vice president, which, by the way, worst job in the entire organization. It's all the dirty work and none of the glory. But then the next year, I served as president, just like he said. And, you know, the biggest thing I learned through being on the board, serving as VP, then as president, I've continued on the board now for the better part of a decade. The most important takeaway that I've learned, or at least one of the most, is this group is a bylaws-driven organization. All told, I've been a part of it for almost 15 years, but the group's been in existence initially under a different name, but it's still the same organization, same founding members since the late 80s. The late 80s. that's almost 40 years. And in groups like this, that's unheard of. And now having served on the board for all these years, I could tell you the secret. It's not really a secret, but the most significant factor in ensuring the SCVBG's success and endurance over these years is the fact that we have a really well-written, living set of bylaws that year after year after year, we as a board are faithful to. It's a living document, so we're still able to amend the bylaws through a process that's actually spelled out in the bylaws. But any number of situations that arise in the group, how it functions, its basic purpose, the basic responsibilities of each individual member, so much of the function in the group is spelled out in the bylaws. And as someone on the board, I go back and read them at least once a year. But we're also constantly referencing something in the bylaws when issues arise. It doesn't dominate, you know, it doesn't like dictate our every move, but it serves as a shared point of reference and a shared commitment that gives some basic guardrails to how we function, some guidelines to how we function. And each of us as individual members and as a group defer to that common reference point. So we have a commitment to the rule of law, in this microcosm. So as it pertains to our country and the state of things right now, we've talked a little about the First Amendment alone in the U.S. Constitution. We refer to it a few times here in recent weeks with Danielle Allen and Bill Kristol, for example. And we've seen instances where those five freedoms from the First Amendment that are talked about, you know, right out of the gate in the Bill of Rights, that they've been under attack, and they're only more at risk. So the right to peacefully assemble, it doesn't include ordering the National Guard to shoot protesters that, you know, a certain ex-president doesn't like. This is something that's actually happened. And he talks about doing even more brazenly in the next administration. The freedom of the press, it can only withstand, you know, so much of Trump's any enemy of the people nonsense. And his stated intention of actually arresting journalists who, you know, dare to be critical. In other words, reporters who are actually doing their job. The Donald would have us go the way, you know, he has this authoritarian crush on Putin, and he would go in that direction. And this isn't he would start jailing journalists like Putin. And it's not hyperbolic. This is real. I don't believe a lot of what comes out of Donald Trump's pie hole. But when he says indict him out loud at rallies in terms of people and like perceived enemies, people he doesn't like, that's something I believe. And that is not fidelity to the rule of law. It's this cowering devotion that he wants to the rule of Donald Trump. That's it. Maybe, and here's the thing, I get it. Some people don't like the New York Times. Just blanket, hate the New York Times, hate the Washington Post, hate MSNBC. Maybe you really don't like all those people who are protesting in the summer of 2020, those people. And that's a problem unto itself, but I don't care. More importantly, who you like and don't like for whatever reason doesn't dictate our rule of law. Not in this constitutional republic, not in American democracy. Here, we have the rule of law. So our principles so far, again, just to review, individual freedom, limited government, the rule of law, as well as the concept of peace through strength. Peace through strength. And I get why this might be a tricky one. Kristen Cobes-Dume, who I hope to have on the program at some point, she examined a really useful comparison in her book from a couple of years ago, Jesus and John Wayne. Two very different ideas of strength. A sort of chest-thumping, peacocking, posturing kind of strength, or a real strength based on the firmness or the integrity of our values, like the values articulated in documents like the U.S. Constitution. And then we have, moving on with the basic principles, we have fiscal responsibility. Again, I'm a small business owner, so being fiscally responsible is like adhering to the laws of nature. I literally was just balancing our P&L, our profit and loss statement, just before I hopped on. And, you know, it's like the law of gravity. We've discussed this. I've sort of made this sort of illustration, this joking illustration in the past. You can argue with the existence of gravity, but if you try to test it out in the wrong way, it's not going to go well for you. And this one's like the laws of mathematics. At the end of the day, we business owners got to figure out how to balance our P&L, our profit and loss statement, just like a country does. I get that it's a simple analogy, but it's just a quick way to understand why my general disposition favors fiscal responsibility. And fiscal responsibility is related to the principle of free markets. Again, a whole other area of inquiry that maybe is best suited for another episode, if not a whole other podcast. But this is certainly a core conservative principle, fiscal responsibility. By the way, I did like the early drafts of the law that became the legislation that became the 2017 tax law that Trump passed. It was Paul Ryan's drafts that he'd been working on for the better part of 10, 15 years, even arguably going back to when he was working with Jack Kemp. I love the early versions of that. The reason that it came out in like this disfigured, you know, warped way that wasn't an example of fiscal responsibility. It put us incredibly deeper into debt. It wasn't paid. These tax breaks weren't paid for. You could argue about the effects that it had on the economy, but you can't argue about whether it was paid for, or whether it was fiscally responsible. It wasn't. So anyway, that's again, maybe for a whole other conversation unto itself, but free markets, definitely a core conservative principle. One thing I will say about free markets is that free markets are not illustrated by some governor who tries to impose his will on companies that do business in a state like Florida and tries to restrict that company from saying certain things, whether it's expressing for support for their employees who are gay or restricting those same companies from trying to enact health and safety measures as they see fit, including whether they ask their employees to wear a mask during a worldwide pandemic, if that's their determination. You know, so with our company, we have our techs going into people's homes. So during 2020 and 2021, so many of our clients really wanted our guys wearing masks. Whatever you think about the merits of mask wearing, I really don't care. It's one small thing, you know, a minor inconvenience that our team could do to put our customers' minds at ease. To me, I don't care what you believe or what your own research told you. Don't get me started on, I got to do my research, you know? You can do your research, but there's an informed way to do this, and then a way that basically stacks the deck where you're in a bespoke reality. You're just confirming your biases. So that's a whole other conversation. But for us, the masks in people's homes, it was just a basic, a common courtesy that we could extend to our clients. And honestly, it really isn't that big of a deal to put on a stinking mask. If we were wrong as a company in making that call, the free market would meet all that out. Either I'd have a rebellion among my crew and I'd lose them all to my competitors, or the market, our customer base, would react against us and we'd lose business that way. But we determined that many, if not most of our customers, felt more comfortable during that time if they had workers in their homes that wore masks. And each of the guys figured it out. It really wasn't that much of a big deal. They liked their jobs. They liked being able to stay busy and keep a steady paycheck during that time. So that's the determination that we made. But that's a free market principle, allowing us as business owners to determine what's best for our country, for our company. What's not a free market principle is when I got some governor who's doing a, you know, where woke goes to die dance so he can get a hit on Fox News telling me how to run my company. That's not conservative. DeSantis's theatrics and trying to make a big show about how tough he is with companies like Princess Cruises and Disney's and the Disney's of the world. That's not conservative. That's not about free markets. It's just about putting on a show for a small, you know, a tiny segment of the audience who either don't know or don't care what it actually means to be conservative. What is conservative are these principles. We got individual freedom, limited government, rule of law, peace through strength, not the peacocking kind, but real strength, Christ-like strength, fiscal responsibility, and free markets. And lastly, let's make sure that we underscore the seventh and most arguably the most important principle of being a conservative, that is human dignity. As Christians, and listen, I know that a lot of people who listen aren't Christians, so I'm just saying it as my frame of reference, you know, what I've determined to be, you know, my belief system. And I'm not trying to impose that on anybody else, but I'm just trying to be true to who I am and share with you how my belief system, a little insight into my belief system. So as a Christian, I think of the concept of Imago Dei, seeing the image of God imprinted on every human soul. You know, and I understand other world philosophies, other religions have a version of this. Seeing godliness in others, seeing the transcendence in others. Either way, there's a certain dignity that we see in each and every person and who they are as an individual. So when you hear a Sean Hannity or a Mark Levin, you know, he's my bestie, my favorite, or Dan Bongino or Matt Walsh, some version of these are the same people who, or you take a quick glance at their podcast feeds and you see this the prevalence of phrases like the left or leftists, or even painting the entire, you know, fourth estate with one broad brush by simply referring to the media or the MSM. This isn't about human dignity. Better example, when you have the leader of the Republican Party, the individual who's put his imprint on all of the right-wing media, who talks about vermin and shithole countries and poisoning the blood. This is not about human dignity. This is not about Imago Dei. This is about making broad generalizations for anyone and everyone that can be identified as being in any way a part of the left, or journalists who can be lumped in with the mainstream media. Making these generalizations so that we can, the purpose is that is to dehumanize people. Oh, he's a leftist. The sham trial in New York, that's a radical left district. As if any district in this country, whether it's in New York City or anywhere else, it doesn't count. It's somehow not American, even less than human, merely because And you've heard demonocrats. You've heard it. Why? Because they vote a certain way? These generalizations aren't about human dignity, about seeing the imago Dei in each individual. It's about dehumanizing each other in order to vilify and demonize. And that is not conservative. It is not a conservative virtue. So we could definitely add to or subtract from this list or even debate the principles we included, depending on which conservative scholar would be our main reference. But again, just as a general starting point, we have individual freedom, limited government, the rule of law, peace through strength, fiscal responsibility, free markets, and human dignity. And here's another thing about my own conservatism. There's an order of priorities. So the concept of human dignity informs every other principle. While the idea of peace through strength, if we're being frank, has been abused way too often. It's been distorted into instances of just domination. And that lacks a deference to the dignity of other human beings. And it's something else. It just needs to be pointed out. That is, the fact that I'm more conservative, that I align more with Edmund Burke than with Thomas Paine, to use a more fun comparison, that I align more with Alex P. Keaton, the character Michael J. Fox played on Family Ties. I identify more with his character than with the hippie parents. And that's why I have some policy differences with the Biden administration. The same way that real conservatives like Adam Kinzinger and Liz Cheney had deep differences with and still do with the Biden administration. And that's okay. It's how it's supposed to be. So speaking of which, I thought there was a really helpful exchange that Liz Cheney had with an excellent journalist, John Dickerson, a recent interview he conducted with her. And this is one of the parts that's pissing people off. But it's so on point. So John Dickerson asks, "You once used to say that nobody could challenge your conservative credentials. What if being a conservative today is defined by one thing, your support for Donald Trump?" And Liz Cheney says, "Well, I know what conservative means. And I think that the most conservative of all conservative values is fidelity to the Constitution." So, you know, there certainly are people today who are caught in this cult of personality, but that's the opposite of conservative. And then Dickerson asked, "If a person is a member of Congress and they have sworn an oath to defend the Constitution, can they defend the Constitution and also endorse Donald Trump?" To which Liz Cheney simply said, "No, it's inconsistent." Along those lines, another pillar of the modern conservative movement is William F. Buckley. But here's a really interesting, it's an important distinction between Buckley's conservatism and the fraudulent type of conservatism of the Trump era. Buckley's conservatism meant, and this is a quote from the Bill of Rights Institute, William F. Buckley and his colleagues at the National Review, they acted as gatekeepers of conservatism, which meant, and this is the quote, "excluding those ideas and groups they considered extremist, nutty, or dangerous. Among those considered unworthy of inclusion in modern conservatism were anti-Semites, interesting, right? So the genocide Joe crowd, they have a point. They have a point. I don't know if you heard that, but yeah, long record of embracing neo-Nazis, anti-Semites, whatever you think his policy position on Israel is. But that's another story. Going back to the quote, "among those considered unworthy of inclusion in modern conservatism were anti-Semites, white supremacists, the extremist anti-communists of the John Birch Society and Ayn Rand, and our ideology of hyper-capitalism combined with hyper-atheism," which, again, as you can see, it's quite a difference from very fine people on both sides. So we could talk about, you know, other real conservatives and go further, you know, draw these illustrations out, whether it's from recent history. I mentioned Jack Kemp and Paul Ryan, but hopefully this helps to flesh out some of the core principles of conservatism and how it's in such stark contrast to Trumpism. And again, the words, actions, and character of Donald Trump. But the other reason, again, and frankly, the more important one that I'm anti-Trump is because I'm a Christian. But I'm going to save that for part two of this conversation. And that's what you call in the biz a teaser. Not really a cliffhanger, but yeah, a little teaser so that you'll tune in again. I've been talking about this experiment where I could open up to practically any page of the Bible and it testifies against the words, actions, and character of Donald Trump. So that'll be fun. It might get some of my buddies from church. I don't know. Maybe they'll invite me back to Bible study just so they can kick me out again. So lastly, I'll just say, if you're still listening, let me know what you think. I'm really interested in how to do all this better. I am just not going to wave the white flag to those who have just hijacked words like conservative and Christian and claim it for their own, for the most unconservative and anti-Christian movements. What I really hope, believe it or not, is to be able to have these conversations better, to have healthier, more meaningful conversations with people that just aren't like me or have different views from me, to be able, you know, like I said before, to be able to be grown-ass people doing kick-ass work. Like, you know, my buddy from who has that great creative shop. So I guess today I might have sounded a little more like kicking some ass, but that's okay. Sometimes it's required. Or I don't know, maybe not. And that's why I'd love to know what you think. So I'll just wind it down there. As always, if you dig what we're doing, remember to follow the show and write that review. Tell a friend about Talk of Politics and Religion Without Killing Each Other. We are easy to find. I've been finding, if I just type in without killing each other, without the G at the end of killing, without killing each other, our big purple logo will show up. You can find it on all the apps. And you can find me at Corey S. Nathan. That's at C-O-R-E-Y-S, S as in Scott, N-A-T-H-A-N, at Corey S. Nathan. Now go talk some politics and religion with gentleness and respect, and have a great week.